Welcome to Revere Assets, Your Money, with Danny Stewart.
You never know how far the stock is going to go down.
Tim Razor.
Danny knows I'm a geek for all of this stuff.
And Don Vandenborg.
Telling it like it is.
If you're seeking the best stock knowledge this side of Wall Street, you've come to the right place.
I'm sorry, did I steal your thunder?
No, you didn't steal any thunder. Who's handling this segment?
For the next hour, Danny, Tim, and Don will be talking investing.
Investing is 90% psychological, and I love that.
Trades.
The market will usually overshoot to the downside and to the upside.
And dumpster fires.
Because it doesn't matter what you think or what I think, and it matters even less what Danny thinks.
And now, here's your hosts, Danny, Tim, and Don.
So our producer is Kenny, and Kenny does a real bang-up job, as you know, stock nerds, market lovers. When we get started, there's some things that Kenny does to make the quality of the sound better, but then he does drops into the music, and with the music, excuse me. And so I like this week. So I was playing before the show begins. I was playing. Danny wasn't here for it because Danny is slow at getting into the studio, but I was playing a little Guns N' Roses. I was playing Patience because I think it's fitting for this market environment. And then, you know, I didn't realize Hall & Oates had some lyrics applicable to this market. And so if you're familiar with the song Maneater, Don, you know Maneater?
Love it. I've got it in my, on my, on the list that I'm, the music list that I am most frequently listening to now has Maneater on it. That's my favorite Hall & Oates song.
So the words, if you're not familiar with the words, stock nerds, to Maneater, tweets only come out at night, the lean and hungry type, nothing is new, I've seen Trump here before. You've not seen the lyrics to Maneater, Danny?
I've not seen the lyrics.
No. Watching and waiting, Trump's waiting for you, his eyes are on the door. Interesting. It's such a news-driven market. You don't believe me that those are the words to Maneater, do you?
No, I don't.
No, not at all? No. So many of
you didn't mention the best lyric, though. Watch out, boy, she'll chew you up.
Oh, my God. This is such a market for that. Like, the market gave back. Everyone knows this, so I'm not covering new turf here. Everyone knows the market gave back all the third-quarter gains in the span of a couple of days there. And I think that's the veracity of this market. Hence the Maneater. I was listening to Maneater. Danny did make it in for Maneater. He missed Patience.
I heard Maneater.
And it's interesting because it took like 3 days to give up all of those gains. And I've been short this, not overall short. I think you need a mix of longs and shorts in your portfolio right now. And if anyone who's been watching the videos at night that Don and I produce 5 nights a week, by the way, as I interrupt myself, I was doing the math, Danny, the other day, with the averaging two to three videos a week, you know, Don does the other half, and then the it's about an hour, 10 minutes we do of audio on average a week. It adds up to about 5,000 minutes of content that I produce. Don does, you know, equally as much. And then I don't know where you are, but it's interesting. Like, it's a lot of content. And I it's the only thing. It's the whole word of mouth. It's amazing how it's grown. But anyway, I digress about the content we create. So, but if you've been watching the videos, you know, I've had various short positions on, and Don has had his short positions on. But it just took a while to unfold for those to come to fruition, because the market wanted to do market things in September. But then in this, it took a whole month to build up, right? Mm-hmm. Gave it all back in 3 days. And I can see how that's frustrating for an individual investor. Like, I get that. Like, there's like two camps, I feel, if you listen to the media or if you're watching Twitter or however you get your financial news. It's either the super duper bearish or the super duper bullish. Like, I don't know where the middle ground is here. And I think the middle ground is this choppy market. And eventually I think you're going to go down and test the June 3rd lows at on S&Ps. That's around 2750-ish, 2725-ish, somewhere in there. And but it took a while to just get there, right? And now, and then everyone gets super duper bearish, of course, when the event, when those 3 days happen, and now you're seeing a little bit of a rebound. And so it makes me want to cover. The thought I had when I was talking with Danny during one of the sell-off days was, I wonder if people really understand how sell-offs happen. And to the uninitiated out there, you're thinking, that is the dumbest topic, Tim. Price goes down, Tim. Like, it's just price going down. Well, I get that other end of the microphone. But what I wanted to explain to you is the psychology behind it. Because once you get this analogy that I'm going, or this, how I present this information to you, I think it makes navigating the ebbs and flows of the market that much easier. And so, but before I do that, let me introduce the show. Danny Stewart with you, Dan at Revere Asset. One Danny Stewart on Twitter if you want to reach out to him. Don Vandenborde is with us. He is the portfolio extraordinaire from St. Augustine, Florida, manages the only
Robotection.
Well, that's, he calls it, yeah. Robotection.
Robo-advisor with the sell-discipline.
Yeah, it's the only portfolio that's a robo-advisor with the sell-discipline is what I'm trying to get out there. He does blue-chip income and grow-tection. And then I'm here with you, Tim Razor, the most handsome person in the office. And you can get me at Tim at Revere Asset.
Lucky this isn't TV.
Or at, oh,
talk you. About the cleanest dirty shirt, jeez.
Or at TJ Razor on Twitter. Listen, in this market environment, all joking aside, I think if you have questions about what you're holding in your portfolio, why you're holding it strategically, how you move forward, get a second opinion. And whether it's from us or somebody else, just talk to somebody. The last thing you want to do is sit like a deer in the headlights when the stuff that you have isn't working, and there's no guarantees that it is going to work in the future. And it's really hard. I mean, people think it's true. All the answers in the world for any question you possibly could have are in the palm of your hand in your phone. But what's the market going to do is not one of them. And so it's a probabilistic mindset that you need, not a declarative, definitive mindset. And I think we do a very good job of helping clients and non-clients alike understanding that and helping them make the best decisions. And if you want a second opinion, just call 855-REAL-WEALTH. Do it on the weekends when you're available. It's fine. We answer the phones when we're available. It's a really big deal here, stock nerds, because you need to take in the information when you're mentally available, not when you're hurried or harassed at work, depending upon where you work. And rest assured, look, not everyone that calls us becomes a client. And that's because maybe you're in a great position. Our job is advocacy of individual investors. You know, as I like to say, Danny and here at Revere, we're America's RIA or America's fiduciary. And so you don't have to worry that you won't get spammed. We don't have a sales team that's going to harass you or email you. Look, if you call and ask a question, you're just going to get an answer. And that's it. And then if you want to talk further, that's fine. But don't sit and let people on TV tell you everything's fine when you might have some kind of inkling in your stomach that maybe everything isn't fine. I should actually find out what's going on. So there you go. So I'm talking about how selling works in the markets. And it's not as simple. Well, it is price going down. But you oftentimes forget before selling takes place in the market space that the market every day is a price auction. And it takes the auctioneer, the market maker or computer, whoever's doing it, it takes the auctioneer to drive that train. And the auctioneer will, if you take Apple or any stock, and the auctioneer raises his hand and he says, who's got 220 for Apple, 220 for Apple? And hands go up. And then who's got 221 and 222? And it takes an immense amount of demand to get stocks to go up in price. It takes action by buyers. But for a stock to go down, it doesn't always necessarily take a big bad news event or an earnings event. It simply means that the participants of the auction didn't show up. So in Apple's case, if they're holding an Apple auction and the auctioneer stands up at the podium and she or he starts saying, who's got 220 for Apple, but there's nobody in the audience or the people in the audience are sitting on their hands, he's then going to go, who's got 219? Who's got 217? And when you see these sharp sell-offs, what you're witnessing is what was taking place in the underneath of the market of September. the lack of demand for equities, high quality equities. And that's a really big deal that I want to explore with you just for a few minutes, because you could see this happening. It was just a matter of Guns N' Roses the marketing. No, Guns N' Roses-ing the market. I think I said that backwards at first. And having a little patience to let it all play out. And what really gets a lot of individual investors, I believe, is the lack of patience. And that doesn't mean that you're going to be right. Just because you have patience doesn't mean you're going to be right. You know, the old adage is, I was just early. No. Look, you can be wrong, and then you have to reverse course. But the deterioration of the market in September was something very noticeable, if you were looking for it. And I don't mean that sarcastically, you know, but a lot of people aren't looking for that. It's just, what did the indices do? But the internals were deteriorating underneath of the leading stocks. And that's a big deal. And so what you had, though, what makes the last couple of days in the market, or the selling days in the market so rough, is you had a deterioration, not only further deterioration of the growth stocks. And by growth, I shouldn't just say growth, the leading stocks, the fundamentally sound, technically sound stocks. You also had further deterioration. You had to give up, not further, you had to give up of all the value stocks, of the stocks that led that whole September rally, or the Neil Diamond market. September morn. I should have played that at the beginning of the show. And so September morn came and left a brand new day. I think that's the start of that song. That's probably in Don's playlist. Don, you like the Neil Diamond?
Absolutely not.
Well, that's yet another entertainer who I've got ahead of Kiss. Kiss are the laziest songwriters ever. Remember,
I don't think that Neil Diamond is so good. So good.
You know, Don's shouting it out loud. What you have to now wonder about this, and you don't want to begrudge a market. Like, you don't want to say, hey, nothing's changed and the market's going to go back down again. Look, you need to, if you watched the video I produced on Thursday of this week, which would be October 3rd, the evening of October 3rd, you pick your spots. And then you actually execute the plan you describe, or you say, you know, the situation's changed. But what you don't want to do in this market is constantly chase. And that's what I think happened. I mean, if you chase that market in September, did you really sell the top? Because if the top in leading stocks was somewhere between September 10th and September 13th.
I was going to say September 11th.
No,
I'm teasing.
It was September 10th or September 13th where stocks like Roku just were giving up the ghost. And look, you can chastise the market all you want. Like, you know, the whole market can't be Apple, Amazon, Facebook, Google. But the truth of the matter is these things are such behemoths that they drive a tremendous amount of not only price action in the cap-weighted indices. They drive a tremendous amount of investor sentiment. And sentiment matters. If you say sentiment doesn't matter, you are so misguided on the confidence factor in the markets and its power. And I'm telling you, the consumer confidence level, that's the thing you want to be watching. When consumer confidence starts to really get noticeably weak, that's when these markets, if they haven't already started falling apart, they're going to fall apart. Because what is this economy? It's 70-80% consumer-based. We're not a service. China is a service-based economy. They're desperately trying to become a consumer-based economy. The United States, when we've lost all those manufacturing jobs, well, we're a consumer-based economy. I'm not saying you on the other microphone. People, politicians, CEOs were willing to cede the service end of the economy for the consumer end of the economy. Now China's trying to become more like us, and that's where you have this whole trade. And by the way, by hook or by crook, that's how they're trying to do it, hence the trade dispute between our two countries. So focus on the crook part, Danny. Danny's looking at me cockeyed. It was a crook joke I was making.
I got it.
Okay.
Got it.
Yeah, like people, yeah, stop stealing our blank, you know? Yeah, there you go. And that's the hook or by crook. By hook or by crook is an interesting saying. And I think it traces its roots back to Scottish times, but I don't know the origins completely. But I think it's, I don't know why this is in the recesses of my mind, but by hook or by crook, I believe is a
Scottish.
It's a Scottish saying, or it's an Irish saying, and
I thought that's English. Hook and
Is it an English saying?
Well, I don't know, but
Don Scottish as your role on the show of wordsmithing. Can you find the hook or by crook? Do you know where hook or by crook comes from?
I do not know off the top of my head. But there's a little search engine that I occasionally use.
Oh, let's I will stall and just get me I will stall for that.
Are you talking about DuckDuckGo or are you talking about Google?
I am talking about DuckDuckGo.
Yeah, that browser is the worst thing Danny has ever installed on his computer.
I use all three.
Oh, it's awful. Anyway, so I've got some more here to cover, but the auction process.
It is an English phrase meaning by any means necessary.
Thank you.
Oh, I think it's two towns, like hook or crook are towns.
By hook or by crook, it goes all the way back to 1380,
whoa,
Middle England.
Whoa.
Mark one up for Dan. Dan one, Tim zero.
All right. Well, you can have that. But the auction process is important that you understand because the confidence process to this market. And understanding, though, just because you lack confidence in the markets doesn't mean the market participants lack confidence, okay? There's a really big distinction there. So for everyone who said, told you so, market's awful, you know, and if you got bared up at the bottom of this thing, you're probably feeling some pain as the rebound is going on 1%, 1.5%, 2%. If you're really bullish in this market, just understand where you are in time and space and where they're going to come in and probably try to sell short the market again and pound it back lower. And I don't know the answer. Like if someone professes to say they know the next tick in the market, they're lying to you, just run like hell. So I don't know the next tick in the market, but I know I'm mentally flexible to the possibility that, hey, this could be a June 3rd situation or we're in an October situation from 2018 where it just chopped everybody up, tried to resolve itself to the upside, another choppy November till it finally rolled over. To everybody who tells you it's the market rarity that you'll have two fourth quarters in a row, like the one you had in 2018, followed up by another one in 2019. I think in the market, especially in this environment, in this political, with this sentiment, I think comparisons to whatever happened in the past, they're not meaningless, but I think you got to take it on a surface. You got to take it on a day-by-day basis. I get it. There's probably not been on history, you know, that people were tracking this stuff, two fourth quarters in a row. Like it's like a rare situation, like lightning striking twice. Doesn't mean it doesn't happen. It just means that it's rare that it would. Maybe instead of taking, I've heard this sentiment a lot mentioned on the Twitter, on the TV that I occasionally have had on, and it's shown up in a couple of these junk newsletters that show up in my reviewer inbox. Just understand that when they say two fourth quarters that have happened in a row and you know sentiment will get so bad that it'll probably end up higher, maybe, but it could also get worse. And so if the consumer confidence drops, which I think is hard to happen when you've got this employment situation taking place that's very good for a lot of people in this country, it's hard to be negative as a consumer. But if the general populace, like there's a reason why I started out purposely not to become political. And I know that probably started out that way at the top of the show with Maneater and changing the lyrics from "she only comes out at night" to "Trump only tweets at night." Because Trump, we all know Trump tweets every minute of the day. My point being here is just because everyone's gainfully employed doesn't mean that their confidence is high. And if there's somebody at the top of the food chain constantly beating down that our economy, even though in the tweets, it'll say strongest economy ever, and then I'll beat up Jay Powell. Well, here's the defects in the economy. We're not keeping up with rate cuts. If people start feeling, and by people, I mean the consumer, starts feeling that they should hunker down because the person at the top of the food chain is constantly blasting the economy or aspects of the economy, that actually could have an effect.
Self-fulfilling prophecy.
Self-fulfilling prophecy. And so in another way, I'm trying to say that I'm not saying anything about the word recession, so don't read into my words. It's consumer confidence that I want you to pay attention to. So that's one way. That's one way consumer confidence could ebb, okay? Someone at the top constantly beating down the economy. The other way is a little bit more substantial, a little more factual, a little more statistic-based. Mm-hmm. And that's wages going down or wages remaining stagnant. And you had that in the September. We just had the jobs report. It gets released the first week of the month. And we had that for the September jobs report. And so while it's great that people are employed, their wages aren't growing. That therein lies a problem. And so, and you can talk generally about lack of inflation, but if you have had to go buy a car, or if you've had to go buy just anything, like people are charging more for groceries, like the things that matter in your life, stock nerds and Mark Lovers.
It's not in the CPI.
Yeah, no, it's not.
And I don't know where the government shops. I like to shop at their stores.
Yeah, that's the problem there too. And so you're not being charged less. Like when people say there's no inflation, you're not being charged less, stock nerds. As a matter of fact, there's a good chance that things might cost you more, especially with what, Daniel? Tariffs, mm-hmm. which are what? A tax. Mm-hmm. No matter what anyone tells you, they're a tax on the people. And so now hear me out. I've probably agitated a bunch of people already, and I didn't mean to trigger you. But whether or not you really believe that we're raking in the dough here, we're rolling in it with these tariffs, it's a double-edged sword. If the companies are eating the tariffs because they feel as though they can't pass on the higher cost of doing business to the consumer, that in itself is going to take down stock prices.
It squeezes their margins. They
because their
money.
Margins are going down.
Yeah.
If you think that tariffs are not going to be absorbed by the market participants, the public stocks, and it's going to be passed on to the consumer, that's going to hurt consumer confidence.
Less, yeah. Either way,
it sucks. And so what you want to be prepared for is we haven't hit that moment yet. I've mentioned it more and more. The big move in the market has not happened yet. I still say the big, whether it's up or down, the big move in the market has not happened yet. And when it does, you will feel the reverberations, whether it's up or down.
You'll know it. Yeah.
You will know it. These are the hey, do we have everything secured against the wall shocks of the earthquake?
It's like Don when that hurricane was going by. He was ready to
get
out of there, but luckily it just strafed him and went by, so he didn't have to leave. And by the way, what you're saying is you need to be flexible to go either way. You need to have a plan
right.
in advance to either get very long or get very defensive, one or the other.
Yeah, but and I think you don't make it. So I started out with Patience by Guns N' Roses for a reason, because it's just not, it's going to be rare that it's an event that happens overnight. This deterioration of the market started in earnest in September, but you didn't see it. And oftentimes it's only clear in hindsight. And so for me to go, and the reason why people don't talk about this out loud too much is because they're afraid to actually say what they're actually thinking, because heaven forbid they're wrong. If we've taught you anything, stock nerds and market lovers, or if Don has not said it enough times, I know he'll say it again. Don, what is your theory on being wrong in the market?
It's okay to be wrong. It's not okay to stay wrong.
There you have it. And so until you understand that you keep losses single digit, until you actually believe it and do it and live it, and you're not holding a 20%, 30%, 40% loss, only then will you truly be mentally free. And so right now, I don't, you know, could they be gearing back up in stocks that are going to lead the market, you know, the fundamentally sound leaders? Maybe. Maybe. I just think that you throw out the notions of it's the strongest. Now begins the strongest period. And I've heard them all. Like, I don't know what it is about October. you know, like it's the start of pumpkin spice season, and it's
Halloween,
the, and it's the start, bewitching. And it's the start of, you know, October's a bear killer. It's volatile, but it kills, you know, like October's a October. People get so bared up in October, and then the market goes higher and it kills them. You can do both things. You can be short the market when you need to be, or flat cash is fine. And then when the market tells you it's really time to get long, you can do that as well. What you need to be is having a plan and being able to take action. Because I just don't think this fourth quarter of 2019, the last fourth quarter of this decade, I feel like I should have played Europe. It's the final countdown. Don, is that on? There you go. Yep, I knew Don knew it. And so, I it's the
last. Danny has no idea what we're talking about.
No, he thinks we're talking WWE.
I know exactly who you're talking about.
Danny thinks Europe, they're in a recession. Is that German? Because the DAX is bad. The DAX is bad could be a rock song, probably. Shove my footsie up your. That sounds like a song from some punk rock group.
Now that should be that should be.
Yeah, shove your footsie. But I think being mentally nimble here is the absolute positive key here to success. I took a lot of time describing that auction theory and wanting to go through there. Here's the things we got on the docket. We do want to talk a little bit more market strategy here. I want to talk about yen as a safe haven.
Okay.
And that's not as boring as you think, stock nerds. Yen is a safe haven. Is you'll hear me make the correlation. If yen's progressing higher, that's typically bad for stocks. When you see yen and stocks both going higher or trending higher at the same time, one of them typically breaks.
Oh, yeah.
And in downtrending markets, one of them typically breaks. And if you want a clue as to what I think about that, whether it's S&P's, NASDAQ, or the yen, which chart looks better? That chart will typically win out, mm-hmm. and then the other one will go
down. And
the
there
other
is one. A very high inverse correlation between the yen and stocks.
Yeah, and so I want to cover very that. High. The race to zero is a bumpy ride. Look, we have to do this every time someone... Danny wants attribution. Don, what's the number one thing Danny says after someone says the race to zero?
I came up with that. I said that first back in 1842.
That is a great... God, I got a Yosemite Sam impression when he said 1842.
I'm going to have to go find that clip.
No, we believe you. We believe you. We've just heard it enough times. So Danny wants attribution when he says the race to zero. And so the race to zero, we'll do yen here in a second. The race to zero, though, is a very bumpy ride. And so sometimes it's great for the consumer, okay? Sometimes it's wonderful, the race to zero. And in this case, it may be a great thing. Like the whole discussion, of course, comes around interest rates and whatnot. But you can translate this to other aspects of your life, stock nerds. If gasoline were suddenly zero, we probably have a really big recession on our hands, but but if gasoline
zero demand,
yeah,
they're giving it away.
Zero price, zero demand. But that might be good for people who are still able to drive. But the race to zero in terms of commissions could be great. Someone will come out there and tell you it might lead to increased trading. Well, look, I'm going to put the self-discipline on you. Just because cigarettes are free, maybe we don't smoke them all. You know, like if you...
That's a great analogy.
Yeah, like put it all on one trade, you know? And so maybe that's what you do.
38 red.
Yep, that's exactly it. And so I don't know how that all translates in terms of trading. But what I do know is what Danny has been talking about for years about interest rates, that there's not one set policy that is set for the way to go forward here. And while there's one group of you out there that are saying, we got no guns. No, I made the analogy poorly here. We got no bullets left for the gun. You know, like when we fire the rate cut gun and there's no bullets left in the old gun belt, you all out there tend to get worried until you realize we can go negative. Let's just make up bullets. Here, draw me a bullet. I'm going to put it in the chamber. Bang. And then that little flag comes out that says bang and it doesn't do shit, you know, and you're just like screwed now. And there lies the problem. And so clearly, though, right now, we can be at full employment. The rest of the world can be negative or going negative or loosening monetary policy. But what you're seeing now in America is after after so many years of an increasing stock market, which people think is translated in the economy, and it had for some point, you know, manufacturing increasing, jobs coming back, wages going up. Now it feels a little bit different. And, you know, manufacturing starting to ebb, trade deficits getting wider, they're getting looser in monetary policy. And a lot of people will tell you, you can't import a recession. But if the rest of the world becomes in, oh my gosh, money for nothing and the chicks for free and dire straits, if the rest of the world comes in dire straits, Don, you like the dire straits? Money for nothing. Yeah.
I do not.
You do not like the dire straits?
No, I'm not really a fan.
Wow. And yet you like kissing.
Was that Dire Straits that sang that?
Money for nothing and the chicks for free. Yeah, money for nothing and the chicks. Yeah. We got some.
That's meant to work.
That song was okay the first 460,000 times I heard it, but that 460,000 first time, that just sent me over the edge.
Okay, fair enough.
Wow, Don.
Well, Beth, I hear you calling.
That was my one favorite song, I guess.
And if we're talking about the worst songs of all time, let me just go through my top three real quick.
Go
Mr.
ahead.
Roboto.
Oh,
Styx.
Yeah, that's a bad one. That was a bad phase for Styx, if we can all agree on that.
We built this city, which ruined Jefferson Airplane, Jefferson Starship.
We built this city on rock and roll.
Beds Are Burning by Midnight Oil.
Oh, I'm not familiar with Beds Are Burning.
Man.
I don't.
Good.
Is that?
Consider yourself blessed.
That's when Styx, the one you talk about Styx, that's when
Roboto.
They went pop. They just went total pop.
I am a modern man. Secret, secret. I got a secret. Interest rates in the can. Secret, secret. I got a secret. Ben Bernanke.
Stop it. I beg you to stop it.
Yeah, there you go. Ben Bernanke, man. See, I feel like the Michael Scott of song here. Anyway, office reference.
You don't sound
Daniel.
Like it.
It's an office reference, Daniel. Office reference. So this race to zero will absolutely eventually end horribly. But when, as Danny says, but when it does is a big question. And I just don't think you get, you're seeing some of the turbulence right now. Like the Fed's behind. Here's my 2 cents on it that I texted to Danny and Don. The Fed's way behind here. They're way behind the rest of the world. So
or they shouldn't have raised back in last year.
So now they're trying to play catch up. I don't think a quarter point is enough here. And even if they telegraph that they're going to do quarter point here, quarter point in October, quarter point in December, it's not enough unless, my opinion. Okay,
this is quarter point's priced in.
It's my opinion. If they don't announce some kind of QE 16, like whatever QE we're on right now, they've got to loosen. And when Jay Powell said we're considering like looser policies or however he phrased it back in September, not enough. It's not enough. And a lot of you are out there shouting, if we have to loosen, that means we're weak. No. Look. You, having the nicest house in the neighborhood doesn't give you the house that you don't get the full value for that often. Like oftentimes you got to go into the worst home and fix it up and then you get some money out of it. Mm-hmm. Right now we've got the best house in the neighborhood. People want to come buy our bonds. It's driving the dollar higher. It's making it tougher for international companies to do business internationally. You're going to hear strong dollar, strong dollar, strong dollar on all these quarterly reports coming up as a headwind is why they quote unquote maybe didn't do so well. And strong dollar will be the mismanagement term of the quarter, which could be legitimate, by the way. Could be legit or the excuse. You'll never know the truth. And so we're in this place where our bond demand is strong because we're the only place that has interest rates. And if we have
positive
interest rates, and that you'd want to put your money in.
Right, that's not super risky.
Yeah, the rest of the world, to give you a comparison, the rest of the world is WeWork bonds. We happen to be Johnson & Johnson. We happen to be Apple bonds. And so it's a little bit more straightforward like that. And you have to understand too that the race to zero is very difficult, tying in consumer confidence to it. If the Fed missteps and the market participants that matter decide they're repricing the market right now, by the way, if they're going to reprice the market lower because slow growth is here, or however they decide to, they could reprice it higher, by the way. If a China trade deal comes about, you never know. Mm-hmm. But if the market participants decide to price this thing lower and the consumer, no matter how many people are employed, decides to stop spending and loses the confidence.
It's a confidence game.
Yeah, and I'm telling you, it's a real tough needle to thread right now. Just the market has taken on a different tenor. And then I want to tie this one other facet in. All these things I don't think people actually think about in cohesion, okay? I've mentioned this before, and I feel like I get laughed at when I do, but I need to repeat it. How many of you, just think about this for a moment, and don't snicker when you hear it or be cynical. How many of you really, truly understand how well we do as retired people is based on the U.S. stock market? How your futures are shaped so much in this country by the United States markets. It's not you can save, but you're not outpacing inflation when you save. Okay? And I'm not saying people don't save. The Fed has forced you into equities again. They tried
because of the low rates. You can't get enough yield. Yet.
They tried.
Well, they said that's what they were going
to
do.
They tried to do savers. They tried to take savers up a notch in 2018. They tried, and in 2019, they said, "Oh my gosh, we can't help savers. We need them back in equities."
Yeah.
And so
you can't reverse QE. Once you start it,
I'm with you. So that's why, even though I think I sound negative today, don't discount the fact that this market could just rip higher as there's no what's the other choice?
Yeah. Alternative. Yeah.
And so, I mean, cash is a position, but that's, you know, eventually. And so look, I am of the Don's of the same milk, Danny's of the same milk. Like that Bill O'Neill mantra that don't count out the ingenuity of the US citizen. Meaning there's going to be someone's going to make the next thing that everybody's going to want to buy into. And right now the market feels different because the market participants have done a really bad job of giving people confidence. I keep coming back to confidence. Do you want to invest in a market that's given you WeWork, or almost gave you WeWork, or Peloton, or Smile Direct Club, or Blue Apron, or Don could just probably rattle off five that I haven't mentioned. They're all bad. Or do you want to invest in a market that turned out the Home Depots, that turned out the Apples? And I know I'm cherry picking here. And Amazon did lose 97% of its value five different times. Or the Amazons. You know, like,
you're cherry picking, but the point is that there are healthy stocks and unhealthy stocks, and identifying the differences gives you the opportunity to outperform.
And right there, what Don said is really crucial, because most people don't do that. Like the active participants in the market, the market, half this country doesn't participate in the market. That's the first thing you need to understand. It's like 52%. Secondly, of the participants in the market, like 0.000 are active in it. Everyone else is a passive player via 401ks or IRAs. And so it's a really big deal. Like, what's investable? Like, what's going to drive this next, like, do you really want to buy the Airbnb listing that's coming out? And I want to, Danny, I'm going to get to yen. Okay. We're going to absolutely get to yen, but I'm going to read something that's going to Danny doesn't know what I do on the show. For a reason. Don does.
Hell, I don't know what you do off the show.
Yeah. So How much of a, so this is from a great article. I'll be more than happy to send it to you about WeWork. And can I just do Tim Reed's here for a minute? Because it's interesting.
Okay.
Yeah, no, you're gonna enjoy this.
I'm pretty sure I like the article. It's you reading that scares me.
Oh, that hurts. Okay, how much of the company's problem was solved when Adam Neumann stepped down is the question posed to Professor Scott Galloway from New York University School, Stern School of Business. At this point, I would say about none. He and SoftBank entered into a suicide pact, and he jumped out of the plane before it hit the ground. He pulled the ripcord. He has exited the suicide pact with $740 million, meaning Adam Neumann, and everyone else gets to ride this out to its logical end, which will likely be a bankruptcy filing. The company has enough cash to get through quarter one. It's spilling $700 million a quarter. SoftBank, to be clear, SoftBank is the only firm in the world that will put money into this thing right now, Galloway says. It has to do one of two things. They either have to go back to their limited partners and say, we're probably putting good money after bad and create an argument for why there's still value there, or they have to go bankrupt.
Take your loss or try to feed it.
The interesting thing is whether or not these individual locations, meaning the WeWork locations, are special purpose entities, meaning can they break up the leases by declaring bankruptcy across multiple special purpose entities? In other words, they may have employed what hotels do. If the Four Seasons New York goes out of business, it's its own corporation. It just goes out of business. It just declares bankruptcy and gives the building back to the bank. But it's not guaranteed by the headquarters in Toronto, the Four Seasons headquarters. Mm-hmm. Some of the reporting I've seen is that they have special purpose entities. They can potentially close a bunch of properties. So let me just flip forward.
They used to be called special purpose vehicles, SPVs, and Enron made those popular.
Yeah, yep. What is the biggest takeaway from the WeWork story? The bigger story here is SoftBank. WeWork is the opportunistic infection that is going to kill the Vision One Fund. It's beyond repair. Between Uber and WeWork, we have $20 billion of the $100 billion at work. One is likely to be a zero. That's WeWork of the $11 billion. So it's hard to imagine they're going to get their investors or principal back. That goes back to a thought. I know it's limited, but investors go get liquidity where they can, not where they, you know, from where they can, right. Not when they have to, right. Or not where they have to. And there's no liquidity here in this Vision Fund. There's liquidity in the stock market, hence you start selling.
Their money is stuck in there, and yep. They'll get pennies on the dollar back.
So it's hard to imagine they're going to get their investors or principal back. WeWork is ground zero. Now pay attention to this part. If the only way it can survive is a deliberate strategy to make it a shadow of itself, massive layoffs, massive restructuring. There's only one thing they can do. JP Morgan and Goldman Sachs, these guys were about to collect $130 million in fees and then prop up some equity analysts to tell their private wealth managers in the marketplace that this thing was going to be a $40 to $60 billion entity. And according to Goldman, it was worth $60 to $90 billion. What does that say about them? What happens to the New York and Chicago commercial real estate markets where WeWork was the biggest and second biggest tenant? What happens to the IPOs? The reverberations are going to be pretty dramatic. WeWork declined in value more in 30 days. SoftBank and the smart people had their shares on their books at $47 billion valuation. It went to zero in 30 days. That's more destruction than the three biggest losers in the S&P 500 lost all year, Macy's, Nectar Therapeutics, and Kraft Heinz. The three worst performing stocks in the S&P 500 this year, their value destruction pales in comparison to the value destruction in WeWork. That's astounding. Gosh, do you want like 2 minutes more of this? Because it's pretty interesting.
Sure.
Okay. But the silver lining, the marketplace stopped it, yada, yada, yada. You know what? I don't know.
They kind of backed off at the very end because they realized it was going to blow up, and they just, Goldman would just get such a black eye. Remember, they took out those Greek, but they helped Greece fudge their books and dress up their books to issue Greek bonds when they knew they were going under.
Gotcha. But let's talk about the human toll. So in terms of the human toll, this is where the real damage starts. Stock nerds, if I lost you, you're like, screw you, Tim, stop reading. You're just making content for content's sake. Not true.
Massive layoffs.
In terms of human toll, this is where the real damage starts. This has been a really interesting romantic story about the fall of Adam Neumann and SoftBank. They got it wrong. Adam Neumann came in, smoked his own supply, and walked out with $750 million about the time that people in hazmat suits showed up. It's like the guy at Chernobyl who refused to believe what was going on. Boy, that's a great docudrama. Thank you. It's like the guy at Chernobyl who refused to believe what was going on and was given $750 million to leave. That's exactly what Adam Neumann did before the blank got real. That's what happened here. So he and his family will literally have to go into hiding. There will be threats against his life. There's going to be so much anger here. If you want to talk about the real toll here, the professor says, the real toll is that there's somewhere between 5,000 and 15,000 WeWork employees who took a job, and a big part of their compensation, the real
stock options.
The reason they took these jobs was because of equity value. And it's impossible not to count your money 30 days out from an IPO. It's impossible to tell your husband to not start looking at houses. It's impossible not to tell your parents, let's think about going on the family cruise together. It's impossible not to start thinking that you can afford that new car. $47 billion? We're probably talking about several thousand employees, people who were going to be millionaires. Now, most of them are probably thinking that in the next 30 days, there's a 1 in 2 chance I don't have health insurance. You want to talk about the sheer human toll, the notion that Adam Neumann was fired, my God, he got on the last helicopter out of Saigon. Stock.
That's a great analogy.
Stock nerds, I'm telling you. The people that you don't, because you don't do this, stock nerds, often, like it's a really small minority. There are so many people that borrow against their stock. And my thought here is this, and I'm willing to put it out there. My thought here is this, that JP and Goldman are on the hook for a bunch of employees that borrowed against the shares of their private equity. They didn't get the deal that Adam Neumann got. Neumann sold his shares to SoftBank.
You're saying they borrowed against the equity and the equity blew up so fast, now they don't have any...
There's nothing.
There's no collateral.
Well, there's no IPO.
There's no collateral, right.
There's nothing. And so you went from becoming a millionaire, almost million, I mean, millionaires, and then almost millionaires, to Danny probably owing.
Oh, yeah.
And no one, I mean, this story is so not even close to done. So not close to done. So anyway, you get liquidity. Remember this phrase, doctors, you get liquidity from where you can. And the place that's liquid, if you have it at your disposal, is the stock market. And if you need money, that's where you're going.
Yep.
So when they talk about, you know, a fund blew up and you can feel it reverberate in the market, it's because they had to put up more cash. Nobody puts up more cash. They sell the stocks they own.
Just like in 2000 and... was that 1998 or when that money market, the fund blew up, the right. Long-term capital, yep, caused a major correction. Well, not it came back, but it went down 2 months in a row just because that one big fund blew up.
Right. And then real quick, before we get to market stuff, I talk about the yen as a safe haven currency, or I mentioned the inverse correlation between markets and yen. Danny, I want to cover that once on the show. We rarely haven't done it, and if we ever have, it's been a really long time. Can you do it for me?
Yeah, sure. So, you know, you were talking about the correlation, the inverse correlation between yen and the stocks, and also about why is the yen a safe haven? Everybody goes, why is the yen a safe haven?
That's a great question.
They've got the highest debt to GDP in the world. It's over 360% last check, right? So they owe 360% of their GDP. So they're the biggest, by far, the biggest debtor in the world. Well, guess what? They're also the biggest creditor. In other words, they're a huge exporter, net exporter, and they have been for decades. And so they've got a huge surplus, and they loan, you know, other corporations, other countries money and credit. And so they're also a creditor. Okay, now, with the debt side, with their bonds that they issue, that's almost all owned by Japanese people. That's internal, whereas our debt is owned by China, is owned by Europe, it's owned by Japan, it's spread out pretty well. It's owned a lot by us, too. But the whole point is, so that's one thing. The other thing is the carry trade, which we're going to talk, those two things. So when the market gets a little choppy or gets scary, or there's risk, you know, the famous words I like to use is when volatility increases or there's uncertainty. That means the market's starting to get hit. People are going to pull in their talons. So the Japanese people are going to pull back their currency. They're going to pull back their credit, and they want to bring money back over to Japan. That's going to increase the strength of the yen. Now, the carry trade, I think, is more important. A lot of people put that kind of secondary, but the reason that's more important is, see, the carry trade people, hedge funds, big institutions, they go borrow money at these zero interest rates. Japan's had zero interest rates for almost two decades now, very low. Okay, they'll borrow in Japanese yen, they'll borrow money in Japanese yen, and then they'll take it to whatever market they think's best. America, they'll translate it to U.S. dollars and then invest in the U.S. stock market. Or they'll go to Europe and they'll make money on the difference. So if you can borrow at almost zero rates, as long as the currency doesn't fluctuate too badly, and you can buy bonds making 6-7%, that's a pretty nice spread, right? Or if you're going to take a little more risk, you can do stocks. However, when the stock market starts tanking or bond, all of a sudden investors start selling their stocks because they don't want to lose money. And so then they sell and they pay off the loan. They pay off the yen so that they buy back yen. That increases the strength of the yen. So when the yen goes up, stocks go down. When yen goes down, stocks go up because it makes it cheaper to own stocks. It's an opportunity cost.
That is probably the best way we've explained that.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, it was a great job by you.
Normally I get too technical and then it's kind of hard to follow.
No, so. I was being serious. I think it was a great job by you. No. Don, I want to talk markets real quickly. What are you looking for S&P wise? What are you looking for stock wise?
S&P bounced right off the 40 week, just above the 200-day moving average, and it held the bottom of the range, and it's coming up to this 2940, 2950 area that you talked about in Thursday night's video. We're above 2940 as we film this at 3:25 Eastern time. Film this as we take this at 3:25 Eastern time. It's been a good move. You had the jobs report, an initially positive reaction. We sold off a little bit. We held the lows of the day, and then it's been a trend up day after this. So I think this action is bullish. Also seeing some money flowing into tech and semiconductors continue to act very well. In fact, while we were on the phone, I bought SOXX. Nice risk reward here. It's up to the 21 while the QQQ is not up to the 21 yet. And the 3-month relative strength of the SOX is a 78 compared to a 46 on the NASDAQ 100. So that's really has propped up. Apple and semiconductors have propped up the NASDAQ. It would have underperformed worse than it did if it wasn't for those two big components of the NASDAQ 100. So holding this 2940 area is what bulls want to see, and then work your way higher. Let's see how we close, and then let's see what happens going into next week. I guess are there China meetings next week?
That's the 10th. There's got to be a book in the UK or a sports book somewhere taking whether those meetings happen, like cancel at the last minute. Like, there's got to be someone taking odds on that, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sure.
So, yeah.
I'm also seeing a bunch of leaders from the leg up that we had this year coming, bouncing off of their 150 or their 200-day moving averages, and seeing their 21s stop going down and curling back up, and those are all positive signs.
Yeah. Okay. Good stuff. So, stock nerds, I think the best thing you can do this weekend is watch Don's video. If you want a watch list heading into next week, I've covered my watch list, what I'm looking at in videos this week. Mm-hmm. But Don, I mean, you're getting the most up-to-date watch list. Go to Revere Asset. We don't even make you put your email address. We just give it to you. Right on the homepage, it says daily market update. You click on it, and Don's video will appear. All the videos we've ever done will appear, but in order, sequential order. Get the 21 over 21 stock watch list. That's the 21 stocks Don's watching over the 21-day moving average. It's a really good primer for the week coming up. But I've got one last thing before you. Well,
and Don, are you doing the lunch and learn this next Wednesday?
Yeah. Lunch and learn.
Yeah. Or is it 10-9 noon Eastern time?
Yeah. So folks,
sector rotation is going to be the topic. We had somebody write in. I was looking for topics this week. I asked somebody to write in. They said, can you talk about sector rotation? So that's going to be the topic for this Wednesday.
So folks, every other Wednesday, time permitting, Don actually does a live market webinar where you can just email him, don@revereasset.com, and sign up, or just email him, and he'll send you the link a few minutes before the webinar, and it's during live market hours. Bring your questions. If you've got a stock, you want him to plug in there and look, and he can tell you, it's not giving you advice. He's not telling you to buy and sell, but he can say, well, you know, this looks kind of weak here. This is what you got to watch out for. Ultimately, it's up to you to make your own decision, but we can tell you what we're doing. Anyway, folks, if you liked what you learned.
And I'm going to, I got one last thing. Okay.
Tell a friend, tell a neighbor. You can just go to revereasset.com, sign up for our daily market newsletter like Tim was talking about. We won't spam you or reach out to you in any way. You can email me, dan@revereasset.com, tim@revereasset, or don@revereasset. I'm at @1, Danny Stewart on Twitter. Tim is @TJRiazor, and then @DVandenBoard.
You know, I think bonds are really interesting here. Yields are continuing to go lower, even after the jobs report. And so that, I like, we're in TLT already, but you can do other things.
Yeah. But it's the capital gains more than the, in the coupon, than the interest,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And so bond prices.
Yeah, bond prices.
Keep going higher.
Appreciation.
And so, and I like gold here. Like gold's been a fighter at hanging in there, even against this strong dollar. And I don't want to castigate you know, like why it's happening. It's like, I just like the price action, and we've got some gold exposure, but I think 1500 is a level to keep an eye on stock notes, and see how the trades in the next week.
We'll talk to you next week on Your Money.